Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings. We are taping this on Monday, so a little earlier, because we're doing a baseball preview. The season gets going at the end of this week. Buster Olney, a friend of the program, he's been on here, and he was actually on for a season preview a few months ago. Obviously, everything got delayed with the coronavirus, so he's going to be back, sort of assess the 60-game schedule and what he's hearing with all his sources and some teams that stand out, some storylines that stand out. So a lot of good, valuable information for bettors with Buster, and also Preston Johnson, friend of the program as well and friend of Daily Wager as well. He's going to discuss his model, what he has, and some stuff that's interesting. And basically, all of us are going to talk about our favorite plays, including Buster. And Preston has some great long shots, even a 1,000-to-1 ticket in his hand that he likes, although it could be a mistake by the book. And we all have some long shots we like, and sort of the theme of the podcast, and we will see some variants here on this upcoming abbreviated season. So first Buster, then Preston, and then later in the week, we'll do our golf and UFC, and obviously Wes Reynolds is hot as can be. He's picked two winners and I believe four golf tournaments. Christina, we have a savant here. We have the crystal ball for golf.
We do. Lucky us. He's on a roll now.
Yeah, he's been doing well. So I've known Wes a while, and I knew he'd be a great addition to the podcast rotation. So he's made me look pretty smart by bringing him on the right time. He's picked two winners already. So we'll get to Preston in a little bit. But first, baseball finally makes its return to television. Make sure you're keeping up with all the major league news with Buster Olney and the Baseball Tonight podcast. Download and subscribe to Baseball Tonight as well as Behind the Bets on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop. Hammer time.
Time now to welcome in a friend of the program and also someone we've had here a few times, and he is as synonymous with baseball as anyone out there. Buster Olney, thank you. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, Doug, getting excited. Tomorrow, driving down to Washington, D.C., going to be there for that first Yankees-Nationals game. I'm going to be doing sideline reporting, and I think sideline is going to be something that where the definition is going to be floating as we go along under these social distancing rules.
Yeah, and obviously with no fans, it'll be a unique experience for you. But yeah, no, I'm fired up. I know our listeners are. I put out something on Twitter asking anyone who had any questions for the podcast. They had 18 replies within the next first 5 minutes. But, you know, it's funny. You and I always do this kind of season preview the last couple of years. You talk about the farm in Vermont. Well, I'm in Wolfboro, New Hampshire right now. So I'm thinking about you as we do the season preview here. So doing a little R&R before the season gets underway. But let's get into it.
I was going to say you're close enough where if I give you the address, you can go and see my farm in Vermont if you want.
Right, and you haven't had to lose it because you've nailed your season win total plays. So let's talk about some of these plays. Well, we'll start with the Yankees. You obviously wrote a book about the Yanks. They are the co-favorites right now with the Dodgers. I'm personally a little skeptical about how great they are. They're obviously very good, and I pick them to win the division. But some of that pitching behind Tanaka and Cole is a little shaky. You know, are they as good? I mean, they lost Gregorius. Are they as good as advertised right now?
Doug, as we began the summer camp period, I was working myself into picking the Rays to win the American League East and to win the World Series, you know, feeling like, hey, that's a really good team. And they are a really good team. But then in watching the Yankees go through their inter-squad games and then over the last couple of days play the Mets, oh, my God, they are stacked. Okay. And they look great. Giancarlo Stanton has dropped weight. He's more flexible. He's got more of a baseball player body. He looks tremendous. Aaron Judge is healthy. Miguel Andujar. I had an evaluator who's watching some of the games on television. You know, Andujar basically missed all last year, and this evaluator said, man, he looks like Sammy Sosa right now. I mean, he's crushing the ball. They have so much position player depth. And you're right that the starting pitching behind Gerrit Cole is somewhat of a question. And then I watched Jordan Montgomery last night, and he showed exactly in conversation I had with Aaron Boone in spring training, where Aaron Boone was like, Jordan Montgomery looks unbelievable. Last night, Jordan Montgomery's out there throwing five different pitches. He's moving the ball around. Hitters are completely off balance. And I was texting some of the Yankee people going, wow, look at that guy. And if the Yankees actually have depth in their rotation, that could be, that is a stacked team. I felt that there was a chance it was going to be the best team on paper that we've seen since those 98-2000 Yankees.
So their win total at Caesars is 36.5. Rays right there at 34. Red Sox 30.5. Given what's going on with the Blue Jays and not really a permanent home just yet, and we know the Orioles, like, are the Red Sox above 500 team?
No. I'm a little bit surprised. When I saw that number, I was surprised because they have so many starting pitching issues, right? I mean, you lose Chris Sale. He has Tommy John surgery. Eduardo Rodriguez, who was supposed to be their ace, he is diagnosed with COVID. Now they're turning to Nathan Eovaldi as their ace, who has a long injury history. And let's face it, and I've heard this from general managers, they say that with some teams, once the losing starts in a 60-game season, it might see cases of where teams kind of go off the rails a little bit. And you might even be more likely to see in teams that are not winning some players saying, you know what, I don't like the way this is going. I hit a service time benchmark. I'm going to take it to the house. So I don't think of the Red Sox as being a team that's going to be over 500.
Right, because there are some players that are apprehensive, understandably so, with their futures. And obviously we know certain players who aren't going to be playing this year, even Trout's on the fence. So if the losing starts, you wonder if some of the players that were on the fence to start the year, all right, let's, like we're seeing in the NBA, right? A lot of guys like Bradley Beal and company aren't coming back for those 8 games remaining in the regular season. It's pointless. So yep. You might see that at the back end. I usually start with this. What are some of the things, the inside sort of scoops in your conversations with all your great sources that you've heard that kind of really surprise you as like, wow, that's interesting?
The one for sure is, generally speaking, a lot of my conversations have been about the way the players are handling the coronavirus health and safety protocol. That the players at the beginning of this, there was a lot of concern that you'd have a lot of players who would say, you know, I'm not going to go along with this. This doesn't look like something that is necessarily going to work, something I don't want to participate in. It seems like that those guys are coming together. You know, that's sort of the broad inside view of what's going on around baseball. Now, when it comes to particular players, you know, you hear about Cody Bellinger, for example, who won the MVP last year. And after making some swing changes, and then you hear he's making more swing changes. And I was watching the Dodgers exhibition game last night. Cody Bellinger, I think it was a grand slam that he hit.
Yeah, my God,
he looks great. He is on top of the plate. And it reminded me of, and I was texting back and forth with Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager today. I said, it's a little bit like Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs, where he had trouble on pitches on the inner part of the plate. And so he absolutely crowds the plate to take away that inner inside corner, the high fastball away from opposing pitchers, and it makes them more effective. Robert Van Skoyak, their hitting coach, I just talked to this afternoon, and he talked about how, you know, Cody is getting rediscovering a feel for his swing. So he's going to be great, and you do wonder if it's going to be a case with him playing alongside Mookie Betts where he's going to be driven. You hear a lot of optimism in the Mets camp about Yoenis Cespedes, and he's moving well and swinging well. It was the word. And then I watched him in the weekend exhibition games against the Yankees, and I don't know if that was necessarily the case. In Toronto, there is a ton of excitement. Well, actually, not in Toronto now. In Buffalo or Pittsburgh or Baltimore, wherever they play, there's a great feeling around that team. Like that team, it's not only they want to play the games because they like the idea of having a home field advantage, but they kind of think they can do some damage in a 60-game season. And let's face it, the playing field's a little bit more leveled in a 60-game season, and their young talent could fully manifest. And, you know, maybe the great wild card I feel like in the American League East is going to be Nate Pearson, this rookie pitcher who wouldn't have started the year if we'd had a regular season. If he wouldn't have started the year in April because of his innings counts, but those are obsolete now. Those are off the board. Teams are now looking for ways to develop young players.
All right. So Dodgers 38.5, but it's juiced to the under at Caesars. That's a high ask, but really the National League, it seems like it's them and wide open after that. The Blue Jays, I'm with you at 27.5. They are a giant wild card with that lineup. I mean, you can even get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at 45-1 to lead the majors in home runs. I've seen worse bets. I've made worse bets. Some of our Twitter questions. How will shortened season impact the use of bullpens? Like, for example, are managers expected to go to the bullpen more often earlier? I've even heard of like starters who like to throw on off days, getting an inning of relief just because the importance of one game is essentially, you know, 3X.
Yeah, at the outset, it's going to be a lot like September baseball. And it's hard to say that out loud because we kind of all hate September baseball with the expanded rosters. But as one general manager said to me the other day, it's going to be a parade of relievers. Now, there are certainly, you know, there are going to be exceptions. Gerrit Cole looks like he's ready to start Game 7 of the World Series right now. There will be some teams where the starters are built up more to 45 to 60 pitches. And so you'll see the managers, you know, calling on the bullpen the fifth, sixth, seventh inning. It's why, you know, typically we don't really see relievers come into the Cy Young conversation anymore. You wonder if this year would be an outlier where someone like Josh Hader or the Brewers, you know, could become a factor in that sort of race, just because relievers are going to be especially important.
You took the words right out of my mouth for my next question is, all right, so I've heard some buzz about relievers and maybe even closers because the stats may not be there for starters. I know we're beyond just wins and losses, and we use, obviously, DeGrom, great evidence of that the last few years, but if you have a guy like with five wins or four wins, it's going to be hard. Just that number and just the habit we have as sort of baseball fans, I imagine getting 20 saves or 18 saves or something like that might sway the voting. So does anyone, you mentioned Hader, anyone else from the pitching sort of, or even a starter, kind of catch your eye in terms of potential to win the Cy Young?
Gerrit Cole at 40-1. That's shocking.
That's MVP. So that's MVP. That's MVP, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So wow. So you're saying a pitcher could go MVP as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you why it shocks me, because we're all so focused on him. Like every time he takes the mound, we're all aware of it. Everyone around baseball is aware of it. And he looks phenomenal. And I've also, you know, as someone who worked in New York for a lot of years, fully aware of how these things go in terms of the conversation starts up and it begins to build. And if Gerrit Cole comes out of the gate throwing great, and let's say he, you know, beats Max Scherzer in that opener and he gets on a roll, it could be like Fernando Valenzuela in 1981. Like it just is something that the writers really latch onto. And so at 40-1, that one jumped out. I'm like, now he's someone who, because he got so much attention in the winter with the contract that he signed, all the expectations, how good that team could be, he could do a lot of damage in 60 games and enter the MVP conversation.
Wow, that is interesting. You wonder because they're so loaded. Am I crazy to think, you mentioned Bellinger, Max Muncy may be the fourth best hitter on his team behind Mookie Betts and even Justin Turner. He's 100-1 to win the MVP. Given the usually the winning team, the best team kind of gets their best hitter. I mean, given how streaky this guy is, he hit 21 homers in a 20 homers in a 61 game stretch, I believe, last year. Is that a crazy bet at 100-1?
No, and especially I think with the advent of the DH in the National League.
Yeah.
Because the way the Dodgers use their players, as you know, they'll move them around. They'll give them regular days off. If there's a, you know, nasty lefty who starts, they would sit him down. But now when it comes to guys like Justin Turner and Chris Taylor, Max Muncy, if Max Muncy has sort of a nagging little injury, they could put him at DH and he could still do some damage. So I actually think that would be a good one. I tell you another guy that I'm hearing a lot about in the Dodger camp is Corey Seager. Last year he was just coming back from surgery. He didn't look right. His legs weren't underneath him. He looks phenomenal. And I actually had one person in the Dodgers orbit who told me he's picking Corey Seager to win the National League MVP.
Really? Because I actually bet him last year because people were sleeping on him and he had that sort of five-tool kind of game. And great glove and everything. It's just, you know, obviously I kind of underestimated the comeback from that surgery. So a year later, a guy within the organization is picking him. Wow, that I love the idea of that because, I mean, he was, what, another Cal Ripken everyone felt?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised too. I mean, one of his issues besides the health has been, you know, this hyper-aggressive approach to the plate. Javier Baez of the Cubs has the same thing, where first or second pitch, they're probably swinging. And I think that he's going to, I mean, Corey's a smart kid. And as time goes on, he's going to learn to be more patient. And let's face it, with those guys around, there's not going to be any pressure on him. You know, Sure. There's absolutely, I mean, when you got Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger and Max Muncy, he's not going to be grinding at himself the way that he typically does.
Yeah, and I make that comparison, obviously, for those who don't know. He's about 6'4"-ish, plays the shortstop position, and obviously can do a little bit of everything from that hole. Tiger, I'm just bouncing around here. Tiger, going back to the Twitter questions, the Tigers, 21.5. Can they even get to there?
I don't think so, because the White Sox are so much improved. If you watch the exhibition game between the Cubs and the White Sox on Sunday night, oh, my God, the White Sox, they have specimens. To borrow Chipper Jones's word, up and down their lineup, they're going to be better. The Twins are incredibly underrated. People don't remember that last year, they won 101 games. I think the Indians are going to be really good. You know, Francisco Lindor is fully healthy, and he could take off, which means and even the Royals, I think, are going to be a little bit better. So I think the Tigers, like last year, Tigers and Orioles are going to get beaten up a lot.
So that was my next question, was the Twins to keep it in the division, because I like the over 35. They broke the home run record last year, obviously shattered it, and they added Donaldson. So they're the only team with six guys who hit at least 30 home runs last year. And I like the pitching they added, getting Maeda from the Dodgers, who I think was underutilized, and even just sort of innings eaters in Homer Bailey and Rich Hill. So here you have this team, and they're over-under 35. I think they're the class of that division, as good as the White Sox and Indians seem to be. I think the Twins' bar, and also based on last year's win percentage, which you can't always put a ton of stock in, but based on last year's win percentage, they have the easiest schedule in 2020.
And that lineup on a day-to-day basis for opponents to pitch through it, oh, my God. You know, because Donaldson, the nature of Donaldson's at-bats and Nelson Cruz's at-bats are just different, where it is a battle for 6, 7, 8 pitches. They're fouling off pitches. Now they have Miguel Sano sorted out, where he's going to be wind up playing first base. It's a deep lineup, and I think that, you know, they're in a position to take advantage of the weakness at the bottom of that division. I don't think the White Sox can catch the Twins or be as good as the Twins. I think the Indians could, because of the quality of the starting pitching, and they have made some changes among their position players. And I agree with you. I think the Twins are the class of the division.
Yeah, and look, playoffs are a different story, but you get those kind of five arms, even in a 60-game schedule, it's hard to compete with that. I want to go to the AL West, because the Astros were such a big story. They won't have fans, obviously, in the stands to boo them. But they lose Gerrit Cole. Verlander, I want to say, is 37, if not 36, something around there. So at some point, he's going to be human at some point. And then, obviously, we just don't know what kind of role the sign-stealing played. The A's are historically slow starters, but this is starting later in the year. We're not starting in April like we normally do. I like the Rangers at 16-1. But just what are you hearing and what are you expecting from the Astros this year?
You know, it's funny. During spring training, I was sort of trying to talk my way into the Rangers as a team that maybe would surprise us. And I asked that of some American League West evaluators. And like, no, they're not close.
Well, it must be the offense then, because the pitching's there. With
100%.
Kluber, but their lineup's not good. I can't even lie to myself.
No. And in fact, one of the evaluators pointed out, we had just done a group of top 10 rankings for, at each position. He said, how many Rangers are on your list? I'm like nobody. And he goes, exactly. not the Rangers. I agree with you about Oakland. And here's the other thing, too. And this is the serendipity, the bad luck, that's coming to play in the summer camp. The Astros, I think, without a doubt, have had their normalcy interrupted more than any other team. You know, there were a couple of issues early on with, the testing and getting results back, and they had to cancel a workout, I remember, on a Saturday. And then the following Saturday, they had to cancel another workout. And then there were some staffers who had to be held away. Alex Bregman couldn't work out. George Springer couldn't work out. And I do wonder about a player like Springer as being maybe a classic example of where we are in 2020, because the Astros manipulated his service time, Doug. Okay. Mm-hmm. He did not become a free agent last fall. He would have made like 180 to 200 million. Well, that's gone. With one day of service time, he'll be eligible for free agency this fall. The numbers are going to come down dramatically. And if I were one of his teammates, I'd be like, hey, dude, get out of here. Once you get your service time, just go, just go home, because the risk reward equation for a player like Springer and their other potential free agents in that same boat is not good. Like, if you get hurt, if you're George Springer in the 60 game season, or let's say you had a small sample size that's not great, then It would probably hurt you in free agency. And so I just wonder about factors like that. You know, guys who hit benchmarks for arbitration, for free agency, who will take off. And all of that combined with the whole sign-stealing thing. And not that I think that the players, you know, are no longer benefiting from it where they once did. I just wonder if for some of them, baseball hasn't been as much fun. I covered Roberto Alomar after the spitting incident in 1996. And Doug, he was never the same to me. And just in terms of watching him, he just didn't have as much fun. And I wonder if there are going to be some Astros who are kind of that way, where it's more of a job than, you know, showing up and having a blast and trying to make something happen. But the situation that you laid out, or the dynamic you laid out, no Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander coming off spring training surgery, you hope he's okay at age 37. Those are the biggest question marks.
You know, it's great perspective in talking about sort of the concept of work being a four-letter word. When you take fun away, we all have kind of coworkers that way. Hopefully no one listening is in that boat, but it's like, let's say you get passed over for promotion and they're just like, they're kind of just dragging, and it kind of affects their overall productivity. And it's a great perspective with Roberto Alomar in that situation. These players are human and they're not played in a video game. As much as we subscribe to analytics in baseball, there is a human element to this. And that's a large component of this. And you wonder how much of it will take its toll. Again, no fans booing them, which obviously would take its toll, but we do have other elements to this. But you're right, it's going to be fascinating. And maybe the Angels finally get it together. I doubt it, because they never do. But it is going to be interesting how that all plays out, just because it was such a saga in the offseason. And putting a bow on things, at DraftKings, Corey Seager's 40-1. So he's actually less than Muncy. At DraftKings, it's 50-1. But so in terms of, I mentioned the Dodgers, it seems like it's them and anybody else. Who do you think will pose the biggest threat to LA, even come playoff time, from any of those divisions?
The Nationals, for sure. You know, normally, and no team is repeated as World Series champion since, of course, those 98 to 2000 Yankees. And we always have heard about World Series hangover and the pitchers who logged a lot of innings the year before, they're tired. Well, you know what? That's not going to be the case with Max Scherzer, right, and Steven Strasburg and Patrick Corbin. You know, I do think that the Nationals have some concerns about corner infield offense. They lose Anthony Rendon to free agency. Ryan Zimmerman is opted out. So that'll be a question. But those starting pitchers at the front end make them dangerous. And I think people around baseball are really curious about the Reds, you know, who and I always love a situation where a small market, mid-market team loads up in the way they did in the last year. They traded for Trevor Bauer. They go out and they sign Nicholas Castellanos. They go out and they sign Mike Moustakas. It's a good lineup. It's a good rotation. They have some nice pieces in the bullpen in what is not a particularly strong division. And in a short series against the Dodgers, they have the starting pitching to shock them. And lastly, I'd say the Mets are interesting to me. Obviously, having DeGrom, having Pete Alonso, they've got some depth. It hurts that Syndergaard will not be with them this year, but they had such a great vibe at the end of last year. And I spent some time with Pete Alonso in spring training. He's just a natural, phenomenal leader who on a daily basis, I think, will help, you know, help to energize that team. But those are the teams I'm most closely watching to catch the Dodgers.
Yeah, I like the Nats call. Obviously, losing Rendon is huge, but, you know, they still have Turner and they still have Soto, and those arms are such a force, like you mentioned. Preston Johnson, who's coming up later on the podcast, he's a big fan of the Reds and the modeling. The math guys really love the Reds, so we'll talk more about them. I feel like, because every year we kick ourselves because it's the Cardinals. They always seem to find a way. I like DeJong a ton. He's 66-1 to win the MVP. I just, as much as I'm, you know, as a Dodger fan, I kind of hate, or I'm at least annoyed by the Cardinals, but you got to give them their credit where credit is due. They do find ways to at least make things interesting and make a run. I think they're getting slept on a little bit. Am I crazy?
No, I think you're right. And Jack Flaherty, let's face it, he's evolving into one of the three or four best starting pitchers in baseball. You start with that, it's excellent. Their bullpen should be good. The question is going to be about run scoring for them. And here's something to remember as an X factor. There are, and I know the Players Association won't agree, but there are definitely, because you don't have fans in the stands, some teams are hemorrhaging money right now. And then there are a small handful of franchises that have more stability. And this year's trade deadline on August 31st is going to be really weird, because teams are struggling right now to define, okay, what's value? And I think that there are going to be some teams that might need help on the field that will pass because of that financial struggle. There are going to be some other teams in a better position. We've been talking about the Blue Jays. That is a really wealthy franchise. You know, we've been talking about, you know, the Mets potentially being a dangerous team. By then, we may know who the next owner is going to be. That person may want to announce his presence with authority. And all of a sudden, the Mets are adding a bunch of guys, you know, bullpen help as we get close to the deadline. The Cardinals are in that boat where that team, they know that, you know, when baseball resumes with fans in the stands, that their stands will be filled with folks in red shirts. It's an absolutely sturdy franchise. And maybe they're one of the handful of three to five teams that actually go out and aggressively add before the August 31st deadline.
No, that's such a good point about ownership. These guys take over and they have holes burning in their pocket that they feel like they got to spend in all sports, right? It's just what they want to do.
Yep.
Worst team in the bigs. My vote is the Giants after losing Bumgarner. And I just think they're going to play young guys after a little bit. Their over-under is 24.5. That feels high for a team that I think could be the worst in all of baseball.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I probably would go under. You know, they do have some veterans. And another thing, too, I think it's important to remember is the like Johnny Cueto, who was on their staff. I think he's getting the ball on opening day for them. He's got something to prove. So that as he goes into free agency, Jeff Samardzija has got something to prove. Some of those guys are beginning to be in positions of their careers where they're playing for their next contract. And the other thing, too, is that they've got a lot of internal options. And I mentioned, you know, the trade deadline situation. I think that we have to look at this as kind of like if you were a real estate developer and you bought in 2007, then you were in a terrible position when you had the collapse in 2008. The Giants are in the next 2 years going to shed so much money off that payroll, expiring contracts of guys like Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt, Buster Posey's nearing the end of his run. Johnny Cueto, Samardzija, and I do wonder if as we get closer to August 31st, if you might see Farhan Zaidi, their general manager, do some value buys and look to pluck, because there are going to be teams looking to dump some money and dump some assets. I do wonder if the Giants might surprise people by being one of the buyers before August 31st as they set up for 2021.
Interesting. So proceed with caution, likely. On that, what about the Diamondbacks? What do you make of their 31.5 win total?
I definitely like the over. You know, when we talked in spring training, I told you that I'm more bullish on them than a lot of people are. Their general manager or head of baseball ops, Mike Hazen, absolutely loves defense. And when you look at the additions they've made, adding Starling Marte in center field, signing Nick Ahmed to a long-term deal at shortstop, some of the other things. I think you're going to be good. I think Madison Bumgarner going to a new team is hearing voices he needs to hear at this stage in his career, using analytics probably to, you know, pitch to both sides of the plate. And they always seem to overperform. The last few years, even as they've gone through rebuilding, win more games than what people expect.
You know, I skipped over the A's. Let's go back to the AL West, from the NL West to the AL West. And, you know, we talk about them being slow starters, but a lot of times that's because of maybe the cold weather. So with the season starting when the A's usually get hot. So 60-game season, they could obviously make a run because we touched on the Astros' struggles. And here they have one of those guys who can get hot, also play some great defense with their guys at the corners. Simeon, 40-1 to win MVP. Olsen 50-1. I mean, what sort of stands out to you with this Oakland ball club? Because they have the laser in center?
Yeah, exactly. Ramon Laureano. Yeah, who, you know, made the greatest throw we've ever seen last year when he doubled off a runner, or 2 years ago when he doubled off a runner from left center field with a throw on the fly to first base. It's interesting because I talked before about the Astros and how they've had their routine jumbled through the summer camp. The same thing has happened with Oakland to the point that Matt Chapman, who's one of the leaders, basically said he didn't feel like that, they were doing a very good job of that. Now, that said, Marcus Semien's in his last year before he becomes a free agent. He's a great team leader. They do have some excellent players. I feel like, Marcus Semien last year, for in his third in the American League in the MVP voting, At 40-1, that seems like a interesting number to me. That would be one I would go for. And they are stacked with young pitchers, you know, Lizardo and Puck and those guys, you know, Sean Manaea is all the way back now. It would not surprise me if they get out of the gate fast and they grab that division by the throat. It's an incredibly talented team. It is amazing, though, when we talk about how good they might be, they still haven't won a playoff series in Billy Beane's tenure as you know, general manager of that club, which is amazing.
Crazy. Even going back to the Giambi.
Yeah.
When they were up 2-0 on the Yankees. Just, I still can't. That staff back then. You're right. It's amazing. But that's just kind of the Moneyball concept, right? Small sample size versus 162-game season. You mentioned Chapman. How about his high school buddy, right? Arenado. What's the future there for him? I mean, it might be tough for him to win MVP without winning the division, but he's obviously got the tools and the glove. But what's his future with Colorado?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I mean, the Rockies are in a tough spot with his situation because, you know, his contract, even before the pandemic, was outsized relative to where the market was. And, you know, he wanted to get moved during the wintertime. And I was hearing from teams, you know, he's unhappy with during the wintertime. I think there was some feeling he was unhappy with the Rockies and whether or not they could win. But people with other teams are saying, what are you kidding? Like Chris Bryant's a free agent in 2 years and Josh Donaldson was just a free agent. You're not going to get much trade value for Nolan Arenado. And that was before the pandemic. I mean, his contract, and I'm just pulling numbers out of the air. If it was, you know, above market prices by 5 or 10%, it's got to be 30 to 40% now. Wow. I do wonder. I mentioned before about the value buyers, you know, I want to make clear, this is 100% speculation on my part. You know, let's say that, you know, the Alex Rodriguez is the next owner of the New York Mets. He loves Nolan Arenado. I know that because I worked with Alex on Sunday Night Baseball. And, you know, and when we had a game in Colorado, they spent time together. They really hit it off. Let's say that Alex Rodriguez or Steve Cohen goes in and takes over the Mets and wants to announce his presence with authority and add a big name. That would be the guy. But what I suspect is that one of these teams would say, yeah, we'll take Arenado off your hands, but we're not giving you an A-plus prospect, and you're going to eat $100 million. And if you think that's crazy numbers, think about Alex Rodriguez's path. He signs with the Texas Rangers, 10 years, $252 million. All he does is win MVP. He's the best player in the league. And when the Rangers dumped Alex's contract to the Yankees, they ate about 40% of it.
Soriano.
Right, exactly. And I think that's that type of deal that you're going to see the Rockies eventually forced to make because of their financial concerns.
Yeah, that deal was crazy. I always chuckled at a $20,000 bonus for making the All-Star team. I'm like, dude, you're getting $25 million. You better make that All-Star team. So the performance clauses were always fun. All right, so let's wrap things up. Just taking away all the money lines and futures and all that, just who are you picking to face off in the World Series and who to win it?
I'm a complete coward. Yeah, 100%. You know, I wrote a piece that's coming out on ESPN.com. To me, picking against the Yankees is like picking against the Harlem Globetrotters. I mean, they are so deep. And with Jordan Montgomery filling that hole that you and I talked about in the rotation, it's behind Garrett Cole, who looks ridiculously good right now. I don't know how anybody in the American League beats them. The Dodgers have similar depth. I know it's a shortened season and a 60-game you know, World Series win after a 60-game season, it isn't going to feel as good as 162. But I think the players are motivated. And they were really mad after the Astros information came out. Sure. And I think they have a great clubhouse. And, you know, guys pulling the rope in the same direction. So those two guys playing each other. And, again, I'm a complete coward. I'm going to pick the Yankees to win the World Series, which I hate to do. I always try to go off the board. But I don't know how you pick against them. They're really good.
Well, we've seen chalk a few years, and it happens in all sports, and sometimes yes, you get the Nats to make a run like last year, but we also see chalk from time to time, and they're the only betting teams that are in the single digits, right? Everyone else like double digits, so they're clearly the two front runners in their respective leagues. So I obviously wouldn't be shocked if at least one of them get there, but even if both of them get there, so I'm with you on that front. But I do think the Yankees might if the injuries start to mount, you never know, but you're right, they're just so that bullpen as well. I mean, that's just, it's a force to be reckoned with.
Doug, I mean, think about this, okay? Last year, they led the major leagues in runs scored, and Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton missed over 200 games combined, and they only had Miguel Andujar for like 10 games. All of those guys are back, and they're all fully healthy. They look phenomenal. I mean, it's just, you know, that, and that's added on top of that staggering offense. I mean, really, it's going to be hard for Brian Cashman, their general manager, Aaron Boone, to sit down with guys like Clint Frazier and say, yeah, you look great. You actually probably be a star on another team. And you know what? You're sitting down and you're not on the roster. That's going to be really hard. That's how stacked they are.
No, it's just miserable for opposing pitchers for sure. And we saw that, especially with the Orioles and Torres last year and everyone else. But they were a mash unit. We were joking about just double upping and doing the martingale on their team total every day. Eventually, you'll get the win. Buster, look, man, I know you're slammed, especially this week. We really appreciate the time. Such valuable insight. And it's fun to be talking about actual games just around the corner. Enjoy it. Enjoy your sideline reporting in a new era.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you, Doug.
It's not quite following Elvis in Vegas, but you do have to follow Buster Olney, who was spectacular as always. Preston Johnson back on the program. How are you, my man?
I'm doing well, man. Pressure's on.
It really is. Buster, a wealth of information and some inside info. I think my favorite one was, I guess, a guy within the Dodgers organization said he thinks Corey Seager has a good chance to win the MVP.
Oh, wow. I like that. I mean, if he's up there, so's, you know, a few other guys on that team might be up there too with Bellinger and Betts. So good news for us Dodger fans.
Yeah, no. So just to see him back and healthy would be wonderful. As you know, there were some people who reached out responded to a Twitter inquiry by myself to fielding kind of questions. We'll get to those in a moment, but I want to start with just overall, you know, being the math modeler you are, baseball is such a analytically driven sport. How is 60 games influencing your models versus 162?
So I think the simplest way to kind of compare it for people that aren't as familiar with it is, you know, if you had in, say, the NBA, you know, like the Los Angeles Lakers up against who's the worst team in the NBA? The Warriors are kind of confusing because they've been really good, but they were awful this year, right? If they played a 1 minute long game, anything could happen. People would say, like, yeah, for sure. Any team could beat the Lakers over the course of 1 minute, right? They could beat them for a quarter. Now, it's less likely they beat the Lakers over the course of an entire game. You know, it's even more less likely that a team over the course of 82 games or in a 7-game series in the playoffs will beat the best team in the NBA or the Bucks, the Clippers, whoever it may be that's that you want to put on that pedestal. So MLB is kind of similar in this sense, where over the course of 162 games, the sample is just so big that you know, that many games, the best teams are just going to be better than the teams that aren't as good because of the extra time they're playing. They're just getting more games, right? So when those are limited from 162 to 60, right? Well, what if one of those good teams has a bad stretch of like 10 games, or one guy gets hurt or even tests positive and now they're out for 2 to 3 weeks? Or I mean, that's such a big portion of these games. So every game is just that much more valuable. And what we know is that in a 1-game sample, ultimately anything can happen. So the model kind of as a whole has this really wide distribution of kind of results based on like who can win the World Series, right? Like the Yankees, the Dodgers, they should still be the favorites, but longer shots are going to be in the mix, at least around the playoff line, at least maybe to win divisions. You know, it wouldn't be crazy if the Dodgers like didn't win the NL West, right? Just 2 years ago, didn't they start 24-36 or something in that range? And then they went on fire after that. I mean, that's a great example of just how teams for a short amount of time or for a smaller sample won't perform to expectation, but over the course of more games or a bigger sample, they would. So it just means more of the randomness and variance, and anything can happen this year, which you kind of need to embrace. And when there's opportunities then to take advantage of it, there are a few things I think are worth betting.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's funny you mentioned the Dodgers season from a couple of years ago. I think it was the same year they had like, you know, they won like 28 of 30. And then not too long after that, they lost like 12 straight. So like the same team was just as ridiculously hot and ridiculously cold. And I think people, and we've had some, you know, they're not exactly mathematicians, but some reporters out there in our industry have looked at like the first 60 games of some teams over the last handful of years, right? We know the Nats started really slow mm-hmm. last year, and some of the teams that started out hot, like I know the Rangers did pretty well last year, but it's not as simple as that, because when managers know it's only a 60 game schedule, they're going to manage differently. The weather obviously being different when you start the season in April versus near the end of July. I guess what variables can we use, or is it just straight projections on 60 games? There's nothing we can really deduce from previous seasons, is there?
There's nothing historically we can look back and be like, okay, how did managers manage particularly when the games meant more? Because we ultimately don't know at the start of other seasons, like, are they really not trying? No, they're trying to win games still, but your point's still valid in that, you know what? Starting rotation guys, elite starting pitching, especially down the stretch of the 60-game season, if they're making a playoff push, they're probably not going to wait every five games. They might be going every four games, similar to what we'd see in a playoff series, or the bullpen usage, right? Over the course of 162 games plus the playoffs, you need to limit your elite bullpen arms to X amount of innings over the course of the season. Well, now in a 60-game sample here, you can probably use those bullpen arms more frequently. You still need to give them some rest, you know, intermittently. But overall, I expect to see more elite bullpen usage versus what we would typically see. But then you're mentioning the weather. That's another good one, right? In summer months, we generally see more scoring, more home runs. And so you add the DH to the National League on top of that. That's a great question. We can't really go back and say like, hey, runs are going to go down because pitching might be better. Because also, look, you got to compare it to the summer months where runs are typically higher. And now we're adding a DH to half of the teams. There are a lot of variables on top of the fact that there's just, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with COVID related stuff and who may or may not test positive. And will it come in like swarms or packs of, hey, four or five guys on this team are all out, or will it just be kind of like one at a time very infrequently? A lot to adjust as we go. So it does make me a little more cautious to bet a ton of futures before the season, you know, versus just waiting and see how things kind of unfold as the season starts.
So you touched on a couple things, and you also reminded me of one thing I forgot to ask Buster. I'm a total idiot. I'm going to ask you that, though, that question momentarily. But first,
okay.
In terms of the COVID stuff, like, you know, I know we've talked about it. I'm a big believer in I'm not going to bet chalk, like in the NBA playoffs, because A, no home court advantage, and just, you know, Giannis can get it just as randomly as like the last guy on the Bucks. And that's the same case here. Like, I think chalk is dangerous just because we just don't know. And especially without a bubble, you just don't know who's going to be, I don't want to use the word reckless, but who's going to be unlucky, for lack of a better word, and how it plays out. So I think long shots have kind of more value in my eyes, just because of the unknowns. And, you know, he mentioned Josh Hader maybe as a Cy Young candidate because of the reliever. And that's something you touched on in person a couple of weeks ago, just saying that because of the usage of bullpens and maybe the wins don't rack up with some starters, given that they're only going to have a handful of opportunities. So are there any futures bets you like along those lines?
There are. So there were two that I had hit on, and I think Hader would have probably been my third choice, second in the National League. But you hit on it perfectly, just because, you know, I don't vote for Cy Young. I wish I had a vote. I don't. But most people, they're going to look, oh, wow, 20-plus wins or 200-and-something strikeouts. And they're looking at that stuff. And these days, they're looking at a little more of the underlying metrics, but not a ton, right? Like DeGrom did win it a few years ago, despite not winning too many games, but he was just so elite. His ERA was sub two. When they look at this season, though, they're going to see a pitcher that got eight wins and had 100 Ks maybe. And they're just going to see there's a chance at least that one of these closers has like 25 plus saves on a team that wins 33 plus games and makes the playoffs, right? And if that happens, you're like, wow, this one closer guy, now this isn't a rational way to think about it. They're like, wow, he was the reason they won 25 games. I guess you shouldn't say that. He was only three outs, or maybe even less sometimes. But that's something that could happen. And so I've looked at two particularly, Liam Hendricks for the A's in the American League, and then Kirby Yates for the Padres in the National League, were both 250-1 and 151 to win their Cy Youngs. I bet at two different places. So I kind of have a cost average of 200-1. But they both make sense because they're teams that, for one, don't project to blow a ton of their opponents out, right? They both play in pitcher-friendly parks to begin with. They're going to be in a lot of situations or close games where they're going to win by one or two or three. Like Chapman, yeah, great. He'd be great. The Yankees are going to win more games than the A's would or the Padres would if the Padres' youth kind of explodes to start this season. Now they're a younger team that people do like because of the shortened season. But guess what? You know, the Yankees are going to win by four-plus runs, a good portion of the wins that they have anyway. So I'm trying to look at those two guys versus the price. I think the Brewers are another good option with Hader, obviously. And he's another guy where he just throws so hard and they're trying to space him out over the course of 162 games plus the playoffs. Now it's only 60 games. Like Hader could be going 8, 9, eighth and ninth inning a few times, right? Just get, you're only up one. You need your best arm for six outs. Just throw Hader out there. Like, there's a good chance his usage increases per game, right? Or per expected inning. And if that's the case, I think Hader could definitely be in the mix.
No, it's a great concept. And you know, look, even though we got warmed up to DeGrom, like you said, there are still guys like Michael Wilbon who are outraged, right? So it's, we're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Wins still matter. And just our muscle memory is going to be interesting on some of those stats. So the question I meant to ask Buster and you, and I'm just going to get to ask you, so the floor is yours. How much is the new extra inning rule impacting your modeling with the huge, I mean, home field advantage? It's the one sport where actually the game strategy and the game outcome is literally an advantage, right? Being the home team. So I feel like it's going to be like the NFL, you want to go second kind of concept, winning the coin toss in overtime. Like knowing what you need in the bottom half of the inning is going to be really valuable for the home team. How much does it impact sort of the money lines you're projecting in the percent edge?
So there's, it's a good question. So generally, just let's pretend this new rule didn't exist. You were betting on a team that was a favorite. Say they were a minus 200 favorite, right? Where they're expected to win the game about 67% of the time. If it goes into extra innings and it goes into a 10th inning, that's generally thrown out the window. They are no longer expected to win that game 67% of the time, right? It's no longer minus 200 if you're looking at in-game or live lines.
Well, because it might be like starting pitching, right?
Right, the starting pitching's gone, and essentially once you get to extra innings, it's close, more or less, depending on which bullpen arms are available and where the home team is and this and that. Obviously, it's not exact, but it's closer to a coin flip. So you might see the home team that was minus 200, minus 130 going into the 10th inning. So it really, it's minimal anyways, just because once you get into extra innings, you kind of all goes out the window to begin with. And then you're, each team's getting the guy on second base, if I recall, right? So there's still it's still fair in that regard where each team has that same opportunity. So I'm not expecting it to make much of a difference, especially since the chances of it going to extra innings to begin with before you even start the game are so slim. So if you think about it that way, like the very small percentage of the time it does even go extra innings, those times it's already close to a coin flip anyway. And so in the end, it's not going to really be changing. Oh, I got to stay off this now in case it goes extra innings because they're going to get a runner on second base first or second, right? It's not going to be a factor for me.
So it's funny you mentioned that. I did some research. What percentage would you guess over the last 4 years? And it's just a guess. Over the last 4 years, how many games went into extra innings?
I would say it is between 2 and 3%, 2.7%.
8.4%.
8.4?
Excuse me. Wow, 8.14. Excuse me. 8.1.
Same thing. That's right. Extremely high. So almost nearly one out of 12 games goes to extra innings.
Yeah. So 2016 on, it's 7.6%, 7.5%, 8.9% in 2018, and last year 8.6%.
Okay. Then maybe it is a bigger factor than I would.
So it's like a game a night, right? Like one game a night, essentially.
Right. A little more.
Yeah. Game a night.
Yeah, so, good point. Good call.
So, but it's you know, let's okay. Obviously, the top of the 10th, you're probably not going to bunt over, right? Unless it's like the bottom lineup and the guy's terrible and the manager just does it. So let's say they swing away and they don't score. Like bottom 10, you're probably bunting, right?
So historically, there's like a lot of study and research that has been done on when is it correct to bunt, because it's almost never correct to bunt nowadays. But in the situation where one run wins you the game and it's game over, and you have a guy on second base with zero out, that's the one time it's plus EV, right? Or your expected value, or your probability of winning the game is better, bunting a guy over to third base with one out because now you have the sac fly opportunity, or just even a grounder that the guy can break for home and can score before the ball gets to home plate. I will say this, though, and I make fun of this for the last few years. I've tweeted about it, but the art of the sac fly is dead, Doug. Like, people do not know how to hit sac flies anymore. I don't know what it is. Anytime people get to third, they're maybe it's because they're just so used to trying to hit home runs that there's
the swing path already.
It's weird. I feel like I haven't looked it up. I just feel like every time I've been watching or sweating games, like, the guys cannot figure out how to get the guy from third home. So I would be interested, rather than looking historically, if it's positive to bunt a guy over from second to third with one out, right? And there's some uniqueness to now everyone's using the shift, this and that. So things have kind of changed in recent years that I'd want to dig in a little more before I said anything one way or the other. But the general philosophy would be, yes, bunt the guy over, get him home via sac fly or something else. And if that's the case, right, then you still need to get out of the top of the 10th clean. But in that regard, in-game betting, like the value on that home team just in the bottom of the 10th will be interesting to price just because they're so likely to get a guy scoring from second base, just, you know, blind.
And who knows if these guys can even bunt anymore. We've certainly seen certain members of the lineups bunt. And then pitching in that situation, a guy on third, one out, like the pitcher knows he can walk the guy. Actually, walking is usually more advantageous because you set up the double play. So sometimes you're just nibbling, and maybe that's why the guy can't hit a sac fly, because he's never getting anything decent to hit. I will find it interesting if they do score one run exactly in the top of the half inning. I wonder if the managers will want to sacrifice to begin the bottom half of these innings. And so much depends on where you are in the lineup and what you have left on the bench. Maybe pitchers will pinch hit for certain guys just to sacrifice. Right. Yeah. The best ones are probably the most practiced. So fascinating, but it is interesting because of the man on second. I wanted to get your opinion. One thing I also mentioned is one of our listeners too, about the Reds. And I teased it with Buster saying you're big on the Reds. He has heard some things where they went out. There's some buzz there with Cincinnati going out and actually spending some money. And the question we had about of the three hype teams, the White Sox, A's, and Reds, which is overrated, underrated, or properly rated? What do your models say?
So yeah, I thought that was a great example because this is a clear-cut answer for me. I think the Reds are still undervalued in the market, so we'll start with them. I love just their upside as a whole, even before the shortened season, but even better now because there's a shortened season, and I'll get to why in a minute. But first and foremost, they were a 75-win team last year. But when you look at like base runs, third order winning percentage, these are metrics that kind of look at the underlying statistics and project what they would have won or how many games they would have won on average, right? They were more like an 84 to 86 win team just based on their play last year alone. So that 75 wins, it happened, but you can kind of throw it out the window when you're looking at how they played over the course of those 162. They went out of their way to double down and hire Kyle Bodies, the founder of Driveline Baseball. You can look that up, but they're heavy into pitching analytics, and any team that's diving in and, you know, trusting the process of analytics or have faith in analytics to the decision-making they're doing, I'm going to back that team. And then when you're looking at it now, getting to the shortened 60-game season, if there was one team that I think will be making analytically sound and optimal decision-making when it comes to pitching staff rotations, bullpen arm usage, it could be the Reds. And then you look at the National League, and I know I've talked to you about this before, but it's like the Dodgers and everybody else. And in my opinion, you go to the American League, you have Yankees, Rays, Astros, Twins, Athletics. Those five teams are arguably all better than the next best team in the National League. This National League outside of the Dodgers is super wide open. So if I'm going to take a few shots on winning an NL pennant, why not be on the Reds? I've seen as high as 15-1 still in the market on them just to win the National League pennant. And when it's just the Dodgers versus them, like we saw it, the Nats beat the Dodgers in the series last year. Anything can happen. And then you talked about their hitting, right? Not only are they taking the analytical approach with some good arms with Trevor Bauer, Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray that they have, but they're hitting. They added and spent money. Mike Moustakas, Nick Castellanos. And then they have Aristides Aquino, who hit 47 home runs last year between AAA and the majors. And generally, these are guys that maybe you would kind of initially think, oh, okay, those are good additions when it first meets the eye. But the actual disparity in these upgrades is pretty measurable because last year, guys like Nick Senzel, he had a 90 weighted runs created plus. Jose Iglesias was 84. Jose Parazo was 62. These guys had heavy, heavy, heavy minutes, or minutes would be the NBA, we'll say plate appearances, that are now going to be thrown out for Moustakas, Castellanos, Aquino, these guys that are above average hitters. So I think this is a dramatic upgrade in the hitting. So you combine everything, the pitching, the analytics, the hitting, the shortened season, I think the Reds are as good as anybody here this season to make a run or take a shot when it comes to the National League pennant, as long as I bet they're over 31.5 wins for the season win total. The team that I think is properly rated is the Athletics. Everything lines up pretty well. People still forget, like, they've won 97 games, I believe it is, the last two seasons. They can't find a way in the playoffs to make the deep run, but this is a team that's just crushing always. And sure, they start slow, and I know people have talked about the 60-game season. Obviously, if they start slow, it'll be tougher for them to make a run. I had someone I know that went back and actually looked to see if there was anything sticking out when you ran some like regression models on the early starts for the A's. Was there a reason, weather related? It just came down to basically being flukiness where they've started slow a few times. So people kind of just look at it and think it might be a thing. It's probably not. It's not going to be predictive of the future. And then the team that I think is just still a year or two away that everybody loves, and that's the White Sox. And
everyone loves them.
Yes, they do. I understand why. They made some really good free agent additions. They have some young guys. They have great, you know, hitters plus pitching. The thing that sticks out the most to me, and I think a lot of people will look at the division because, oh, well, they get to play the Royals and the Tigers, which is true. That's why I'm more bullish on the Twins. I know you like the Twins too. You know, that's a good portion of the games. They're going to get a lot of wins there.
And the Pirates.
I still think the Indians. Sure. Then the Pirates are another bottom feeder team that's out of the Central and the NL. I still think the Indians are kind of overlooked, right? They were a 93-win team last year. It's actually the most wins since they added a second wild card playoff team that any team has had without making the playoffs. So the Indians, oh, they didn't even make the playoffs last year. Well, they won 93 games. They just didn't get in, but they were still really strong. And then obviously the Twins are even better, and they already, I think they won 101 last year. So for me, the thing that stuck out the most, so as you're looking at kind of the predictive metrics, right? Like I think they won 72 games. Some of the base runs, the third order win percentage were more like a 66 to 67 win team. So now they'd have to increase their win percentage. It's hard to say. Before I would have said they needed to win 14 or more games to go over their season win total. Now it's like they need to win 8% of their games because it's a shortened season. But just to get to 32 wins, so I bet under 31.5. I don't see them being an above average team. I have them slightly below average. There's a couple games of value in a 60 games season is just extreme. And the thing that stuck out the most, sorry, I kind of went tangent on there, but it's their hitting, and they led the entire major leagues in BABIP. It's your batting average on balls in play. So once you hit a ball in play, historically, season to season, your average is going to be roughly 300 once you put a ball in play. They hit, I think it was like 343, and they had three of the top six hitters in all of baseball in BABIP last year. Yoan Moncada, he hit 406. Tim Anderson hit 399. And Leury García hit 353. Like, these guys were just running pure. Like, every time they put a ball off the bat, it was finding holes. They were dropping in the outfield. Jeer Moncada can hit home runs. Like, guys that hit more home runs are expected to, once you put a ball in play, you're obviously going to hit better because it's going over the fence. But Tim Anderson, right? Leury García, these aren't guys that are just crushers. So there's going to be some regression there. And these are from some key pieces to their lineup that I'm not sure they'll be able to just duplicate again. So some of those things just point to regression anyways. They were kind of overperformed their record as it was last season. So I'm under on the White Sox. I think they're the overhyped team. Reds still slightly underhyped. Athletics pretty fair.
I was having a good day, Preston. You had to make mention Tim Anderson. I think I lost like 8 bets last year. The guy, like, game-winning hits or just clutch hits in like the sixth. That just ruined me. The guy, pure is the right word. He just always dealt, and he would like take second too on like a long single of the outfield. He just devastating for a lot of wagers involving me, over unders too. He burned me. So yeah, I'm afraid of all White Sox action. But what other? I just want to rip through a few more plays that you have. I don't have a ton. I'm very, I don't know, apprehensive about just all of this NBA, all this stuff. Like, as much as we are all itching to fire, and trust me, I am. There's just a lot of unknowns with a lot of this. So I'm going to take flyers on long shots, as I alluded to earlier, NBA as well. But in terms of game to game, I'm just going to proceed with caution for the most part. I mean, I know guys like Trout are still hanging in the balance a little bit. We just still don't know so much. And Buster brought up a great point. He thinks some teams will kind of shut it down. Kind of like, so there's situations like Davis Bertans and the Wizards. Like, he's just not going to jeopardize his free agency. That may happen with Springer of the Astros or other situations when there's teams that are just like kind of hit a wall, like the Giants are like, all right, let's just start playing the young guys. So it's really tough to sort of forecast because it's something we've never seen before. But what are some of your other sort of favorite plays you can recommend to our listeners?
Sure. I'll throw a few out there that I've hit. And we'll start, though, with one that I want to kind of push back on that you like, not because I disagree, but because I think there's a better bet you could make. You like the Twins over 35 wins. Am I correct on that?
Right. I mean, I prefer minus 200 to reach the postseason or even 120 to win the division.
Okay. Because that's, I think, a much better bet when you're looking at it. So I was going to ask you, how many times do the Twins win 36 plus games and lose the division? It's just so infrequent. But they could win 35 or even 34 or even 33 and win this division. And so I prefer that bet quite a bit. I do like the Twins win the AL Central at minus 120. Then I've taken a few kind of random long shots on like guys to hit the most home runs, some MVP. So Jorge Soler, he's 40-1 to hit the most home runs this season. And there wasn't a hotter bet last year down the stretch than Soler. He hit 20 home runs the last 52 games, the last 2 months that he played. And so You're talking about a shortened version here, a 2020 season that's only 60 games. We're talking about variance increasing. He's one of the league's streakiest hitters, and you're getting 40-1. Look, last year he finished 98th percentile in barrel percentage, 97th percentile in hard hit percentage, 96th percentile in exit velocity. The guy just mashes the ball. He's a crusher. So you're giving me a chance here in hitter-friendly summer months, similar months where he hit 20 homers in 52 games. I mean, he's going to be in the mix pretty often. I also found 1,000-1. I know this is seems like a bad bet, but he's 1,000-1 at Westgate to win the MVP. In most spots, he's like 100-1 and 60-1. So it was kind of a rogue number that I thought was worth just.
It might be an extra zero accidentally, to be honest.
If there was a chance that was the
if
case.
If it's 100-1 everywhere, I'm pretty sure that's – unless they just think it has to come from the winning team.
It's 100-1 or lower. Like, he's 60-1. I've seen 75-1, 80-1. But, yeah, they had 1,000-1, so no one else will be able to get that. But I'm a big Solaire fan. Similarly,
hold on, hold on. Let me interrupt you one second. So besides Trout in, like, the year, like, the Angels won, like, 80 games, who's been an MVP from a team that didn't at least get to the playoffs? Have we seen that at all? Besides Trout.
Someone just asked me this yesterday. I'm going to pull up the convo as we're talking because he said the same thing. He's like, he said something about Andre Dawson or something.
Oh, man. And Hawk? We had to go back to the Hawk? Like,
and I said, well, Trout did. And he's like, oh, yeah. So, like, Trout more recently, did. Trout's been. But I also think that, you know, the sub 500 team has a better chance, I think, than normal because of the shortened season, you know, just if the numbers are better than everyone else, right? So,
Sosa won it the year because they went to the playoffs, but McGuire would have won it if there were no Sosa, right? Like the year he had all those home runs, 98 or whatever,
sure.
97. Right, but like, Sosa had almost as many and they went to the playoffs, so he had to win it. But like, you could have like ridiculous seasons. Like Trout, he's considered the best. I just think Solaire's going to, look, 1,000-1 when the market's 100 or lower, that you have to take it, right? So I'm not even going to discuss that. But for everyone else who has 100-1, I'd probably just stick with, like, the home run title, probably.
Right, definitely prefer the home runs. I think that the option is that if somehow the Royals sneak into the playoff, they'll be in the mix. There'll be a reason why. Or it's he hits 25 homers and hits 350 for 60 games, and the next closest home run guy is at, like, 19 or 20.
Or if they're in the mix. I mean, they don't even have to get the wild card. If they're just in the mix, maybe.
True, right. If they're a 500 team and still, you know, greatly overachieve, yeah. That could be. And then headed to the NL West, there are some bets there. That was the division that I thought and still think the market kind of just was out of whack. I don't remember the last time I had three season win total bets in one division. I am very bullish on the Diamondbacks, so over 31 or 31.5. I think both are good bets. So not only were they better than a 31 team last year, right, when you look at their numbers, kind of the underlying metrics, their record didn't really show how good they were. They traded for Starling Zach Gallen, who was great for a while with the Marlins, and then he goes to the Diamondbacks. They've added Madison Bumgarner. Luke Weaver was elite for like 60 innings that he was healthy last season. He could be back. And so even if they don't really improve much on offense, they're better when it comes to their pitching. And you know, I just don't see them being any worse than last season anyway. So I like the over. They also, you can get 30-1 for them to win the National League pennant, which again, if there's a National League versus AL, I prefer taking longer shots out of the National League. And so if, you know, the Dodgers are probably going to win, 55 to 60 games or whatever, they're going to beat everyone down. I like the Diamondbacks over. That must mean I think there are some teams that lose more games than the market currently perceives. And that's the Rockies. I have that under 27.5 and the Giants under 25.5. The Rockies one is interesting just because they haven't really made any additions outside of Matt Kemp, if you want to count that. I know I actually wrote this piece for Chalk and I made a joke about Matt Kemp and the Rockies, and then he hit a home run yesterday in their inner squad game. But I don't think he's like the answer at all, even in Coors Field. Last year, you know, they graded out to be a 70-71 win team. I don't think the top heavy offense will make up for their lack of pitching. I like under there. And then the Giants, look, they were, I'm not sure. They won 38 one-run games last
season.
Awful. I don't know if we'll ever see that again in my lifetime.
I told Buster that. I think they're terrible. I think they're the worst team in baseball. So
they really could be. The closest comparison.
I think they're worse than Tigers and Orioles. I really do.
That'd be an interesting like prop bet of some sort. Just betting, you know, which team finishes with the
Tigers are 21.5. It's just the, you know, their division is so tough, right? So yeah. Tigers have to deal with those, the other four teams we've mentioned, even the Royals, if they're a little frisky. But like the Giants in that bad division, and then to your point, it's the Dodgers and everyone else. So they're got to, well, actually, sorry, they just play their division, then the AL West. But I don't think the Giants are going to win any game. Like they're terrible.
No, like 26 plus. Like, that's a good percentage of 60 games. And so we're winning on 25 or fewer. And I just wanted the 38-1 run wins thing. It was just fascinating. So I looked back. The closest was 2016. The Rangers won 36. They went 36-11 in one-run games. They ended up winning 95 games that season, despite just a run differential of +8. Right, so they won nearly 30 games more than they lost, despite basically scoring as many runs as their opponents. They were later swept by the Blue Jays in the playoffs, and then the following year they had a losing record. So San Francisco, they go 38-16 in one-run games last year. Like, regression's imminent. Their roster stinks. Their pitching's worse. I don't see it at all. So I really love the under there. So three season win total bets in the NL West, and I think all three are still good.
Yeah, so Preston, just for those listening, has referenced like a Google Doc we had all our plays on, so that's why he knew I was on the Twins, and we've had some conversations as well. I think for some of that, I'm in the Google Doc, I did the -200, but for like stuff we taped, I just wanted to kind of keep it simple with an over-under. But Giants are bad. I'm on that. Maybe I'm just a biased Dodgers fan, but the Rockies, it's just so interesting. Like, even the Giants' home field, they always seem to pull these games out of nowhere. It's like really mind-boggling, but at some point, you just kind of have to like tip of the cap, whether it's the weather and the players don't like playing in the wind. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be interesting to see how that division plays out. I'm with you on the Diamondbacks. So is Buster. He thinks they're much better than people realize. He did say this about the Giants. He said some of those guys have something to prove, Cueto and Smarja. So just keep that in mind.
Bruce Bochy's gone. That's a positive and refreshing.
That's the thing.
It could be a negative too, but yeah.
Bochy's the guy. And you mentioned the Reds. I was going to touch on just that division kind of gets talked about how it's not that, I think it's like pretty competitive and some of those top teams are pretty solid actually.
Oh yeah, like for sure. I mean, you could argue that it's the most competitive as far as 1-4. I mean, the Pirates stink, but those other four teams are all playoff contenders. And, I think all four teams. So we're talking, let's see off the top of my head, it's Cubs, Brewers, Cardinals and Reds. They all have like at least a 3% chance of winning the World Series. So if you combine it, you know, it's probably something like 15% of the World Series is going to be run or won out of the NL Central. And I don't think anyone would consider any of those four teams like a favorite in any way. They're not. But all four of those teams definitely could make a splash. And again, we're looking for longer shots, shortened season. Anything can happen. The Cardinals are another team that just find ways to always seemingly win the close games too. They're going to be in the mix probably. So yeah, I don't think you're wrong. Other than the Pirates, for sure, it's a strong division. Well,
and let's just face it. The chalk is not going to win all the MVP, both MVP awards and both Cy Youngs. It's just not. And all the divisions aren't, it's just not going to be chalk across the board. So there is going to be a long shot, whether it's Cy Young or MVP. So the key is just finding that needle in the haystack. You mentioned sort of the 3% from the Central. Who in your model do you have playing in the World Series and winning in the most?
It's the Dodgers. And not even necessarily because I would think they're better than anyone else or because I'm from Los Angeles and I'm a Dodgers fan. But I might even have the Yankees projected the better team. But their path just to get to the World Series, similar to the Milwaukee Bucks right now in the NBA playoffs, right? They're just getting to the World Series so frequently that their chances or the probabilities that they win it all then are just going to be higher than, say, the Yankees, who may have to win a series against the Astros, Rays, Twins, or two or three of those, right? If somehow they have to play a wild card game of some sorts. So it's just much tougher out of the AL. So that's why the Dodgers are up there. But I definitely think you can argue the Yankees are a better team. But that's just kind of, you know, similar. Like the Clippers and Lakers, you could probably would make the favorites against the Bucks in the finals. But the Bucks are going to win it more often just because they're there so often. So, yeah, we'll go Dodgers. But Yankees, they're a close second.
Given that there's no home court in the NBA bubble, do you actually think that's still the case? I actually think the West might be just easier for the Lakers and Clippers now than the Bucks. I think those
because
guys,
they
the Sixers
hold on,
Celtics.
Duck. So because the Lakers and Clippers lost their home court, the West is now easier in the bubble now.
No. Well, because the Bucks lost their home court, and I think the Bucks and given just the coaching edges that like Brad Stevens presents, I think
sure.
The Sixers are being slept on. Let me rephrase.
You know I love Philadelphia. You know I love.
Yeah. 25. I think it's ridiculous. I think the path for the Bucks is not as much as a foregone conclusion as I do think the Lakers or Clippers will be in the finals.
That's interesting.
I'm taking both.
You're right.
Teams, so it's unfair, right? I just think the West is really top heavy. Like I don't think the Nuggets have a chance. I don't think the Rockets have a chance. I just think it's going to be Lakers or Clippers. I'm like pretty confident in that. Whereas I think the East is kind of like level play. I think it could be any of those top four teams. You throw Toronto in there as well. Like, I think it could be any of those teams.
I will say this: the Bucks' win percentage, as far as their probability of winning the finals, decreased the most of any team in my projections. It was over 15% when they lost home court through the entirety of it. Everyone gets to rest, and they were resting guys kind of throughout the season. Giannis is only playing 30.9 minutes per game. So you're right. As a whole, it's definitely more open, but the Bucks still are a huge favorite to win the East.
Right. You articulated it way better with that 15%. That's what I was trying to say. Like, who got hurt the most? I actually think it's now.
Yeah, it is more level overall. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm quite confident the Clippers or Lakers are going to the finals. I'm not as confident as the Bucks. But again, I'm taking two teams versus one. But anyways, I just found that what you said was really interesting, so I wanted to ask you about that because I'm sure our listeners are also NBA fans, or at least most are. Okay, so we have sort of the chalk, we think, and the most outcome. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. You have a lot of plays. You've posted. They're going to be posted this week on ESPN.com's chalk section. And season gets going on Thursday, and we're all thrilled. So I know you are as well. So enjoy the season, my man, and we'll be talking NBA soon as well.
Likewise. Thanks, Doug.
Kicking is for losers.
All right, and thanks to Preston, and of course, thanks to Buster Olney as well. A lot of moving parts, sports starting to come back, so we wanted to give the shelf life for this podcast for all of you to have a few days, and obviously it can still hang into the season if you want to grab some futures. Maybe not the season win totals you can play, but some of the other stuff is out there in the betting menu. So thanks to everyone for listening. I know a lot of content here, about an hour podcast, but still really good insight from our two guests. And hopefully we can all benefit from that on our own accounts. So we'll have another podcast posting Wednesday. We'll do some golf and UFC then. But thanks to everyone for downloading, and we'll catch you on Wednesday.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.